Welcome to the Karen Conti Show on 720 WGN.
Welcome in, everyone. Karen Conti. We have a short show tonight, and it's interesting because it's probably one of the most legally action-packed weeks that we've ever had. It's an action-packed legal week when Bill Cosby goes to jail, and it's not even a news story. I mean, really, it has been a crazy week with the Brett Kavanaugh hearings and with here locally with the Van Dyke trial. I've been covering that on a day-to-day basis, and it's a very interesting trial. So what we're going to do, Ben, do we have our guest tonight? No, not yet. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the Van Dyke trial, and I'm going to talk a little bit, and then what we're going to do normally, I take your calls, your legal calls at 8 o'clock, but since we have an abbreviated show, let's take those calls about 7:30. So you'll call our lines here at 312-981-7200 or text to 981-7200. You can ask me any legal question you might have, or if you have a question about one of the local news stories or the national news stories that you've been curious about. I know people are thinking about what's going on and watching the news feeds and have a lot of questions. So please feel free. And in fact, if I'm talking about something that interests you, jump right in and give me a call now and we'll get you on and chat a little bit. But one of the things I wanted to talk about with the Van Dyke trial is this. If you've all been following it, we're entering into our third week. The prosecution rested its case against Van Dyke. He is the officer accused of killing Laquan McDonald in 2014, shooting him 16 times. The defense is now in the process of putting on its case. We have heard quite a bit of evidence and a bunch of witnesses. The judge is moving this along very, very quickly. They put on a lot of different evidence. And some of the evidence that they put on this past week was very compelling one way or the other. There was an officer named Joseph Walsh who was in the car with Van Dyke on the night of the shooting, and he testified very adamantly that he pulled his gun out. He thought that Laquan McDonald was a danger, and he would have shot himself, but for the fact that Van Dyke was in his way. So he was a very compelling witness because Van Dyke, all he needs to do is to fend off the allegation that there was no reasonable belief that McDonald was a danger to others. A lot of people are misstating what the law is, and of course the jury is going to get the actual words of the law. And the words of the law are not what we all think it is, or maybe what we think it should be. We think that, hey, you can only use self-defense if someone's going to kill you, right? That's kind of common sense. But that's not what the law says when it comes to a police officer. When it comes to a police officer, a police officer can take out his gun and use deadly force if he reasonably believes that someone is going to commit a crime that could hurt somebody, serious bodily harm, and he's got a deadly weapon. And so the argument obviously is going to be that McDonald was walking down the street with a knife out. He wasn't stopping when the police tried to tell him to stop. And he was walking toward a place where there are lots of people. And there was a concern that he was going to hurt somebody. And so that justified the shooting. Again, you may not like that result. I certainly don't like that video. I don't think anyone can enjoy watching something like that and not think that something went horribly wrong there. And you can even say maybe he should have waited for the taser gun and maybe he shouldn't have shot 16 times. But the law allows him to shoot and to use deadly force in that situation. The other situation in which he can use deadly force is if there is a felony, if the McDonald had committed a felony and was trying to escape with a deadly weapon and was resisting arrest. I'm kind of paraphrasing the law. I'm not saying the exact words. But again, that's scenario number two. And from the facts that we know, that might just qualify. The facts might qualify from what we have seen and what we've heard in the testimony. So again, I'm not saying what I hope happens. I'm not saying that I'm rooting for one side or the other. But don't be surprised if you have a verdict that is unexpected here, because as you may know, we haven't had a police officer convicted of a killing in 50 years. And I want to say in the last 150 years in the nation, we've had about 13 police officers convicted of first degree murder, 13 in the history of our country. So it's a very uncommon thing for police to be convicted of these crimes, particularly because of the law. And the law really does allow a police officer to have quite a bit of discretion in what they do and how they do it. Do we have our guest tonight? No, we don't. Okay. Our guest is probably recovering from the Bears win, I guess. So I want to talk, I'm going to talk a little bit further about this, and I want to talk about should Van Dyke testify? And that's what's going to happen this coming week. There is probably going to be a point in time, maybe Monday or Tuesday, tomorrow or Tuesday, where the defense rests, that from what we understand. And the question, the huge question is, does the defense put the officer on the stand to testify? And I've been asked a lot of questions about this. Again, he doesn't have to testify. In our country, we have the Fifth Amendment, which means you do not have to testify if it might incriminate you. But should you testify? And most of the time when you're a defense lawyer, you don't have your client testify for a number of reasons. One is, if that person has a criminal record, and a lot of times when you're a criminal defense lawyer, you're representing somebody who has a criminal background, and you certainly don't want that brought up. And so if you avoid putting him on the stand, you avoid the jury knowing his past, which is really important. Number two, it's not a conversation. People think, well, I'm smart, I can go on the witness stand and win people over. Let me tell you this. Lawyers make their living, they put their kids through college by putting people on the stand and making them look like liars, making them look like they don't remember things, and basically making them look like they're not credible witnesses. And even police officers who have been trained on how to testify and have probably spent a lot of their, their week in some cases testifying in different cases like traffic court and the like, they know what they're doing. But it's quite another thing to have a murder charge and to be nervous and to be cross-examined by an excellent prosecutor. It's very difficult, and not everybody survives that looking like a good guy. Add to it that maybe there are some accounts out there that Mr. Van Dyke wrote or things that he said that might be inconsistent with what is being said in trial. So if he gets on the stand and says one thing and then there's something in writing that says another, certainly that could be a problem. In addition, he does have some lawsuits against him that were settled, and he had some complaints from citizens about excessive force. A lot of police officers do, but he had quite a few of them. And of course, those might be able to be used against him as well. So there's a lot of reasons that he shouldn't testify, but let me just say, jurors really, really want to hear from the defendant. They get angry if they don't hear from the defendant saying, I didn't do it, and here's why I didn't do it, and here's what I was thinking, and here's what I thought when I pulled out my gun, and here's what I thought when I shot 16 times. Jurors want to hear it from him. And I guess I would like to throw this out to you. Do you think that Jason Van Dyke should testify? If you were a juror sitting there listening to the testimony, if he doesn't testify, would you hold that against him? Even though the judge tells you, you can't hold that against him. You can't draw any conclusions from that. Give us a call here. I'd like to hear what you think, or if you have any comments about the trial at all. 981-7200, 981-7200, or text to that same number. This week on Chicago's Best, the CB team is exploring the Italian boot one dish at a time. It's an all-new Chicago's Best Italian, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. Welcome back to the Karen Conti Show. We're talking about the Jason Van Dyke trial. It's probably going to wrap up maybe this week. I expect that maybe Monday and Tuesday we're going to have some witnesses, and then maybe rebuttal by the prosecution. The prosecution gets a chance to play off of the defense's case as to kind of refute some of the things that were in Van Dyke's case. And then, of course, we go to closing arguments. The judge will probably take a day off, I would imagine. Everyone gets their notes together. There's a closing argument for both sides, and then the jury is read the jury instructions, which are basically the law of what they're going to apply to the facts at hand. So give me a call here if you have questions. Should Jason Van Dyke testify? Do you think that would be a good thing? If you're a juror, do you want him to testify? Do you want to hear? And would you hold it against him if he didn't? Let's go to John. Hi, John. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show.
Hey, so I have a question about what you said the law was about when it comes to the police officer. So if a police officer sees that there's a threat, you know, that someone can cause bodily harm, injury, et cetera, and they use whatever they need to eliminate that threat, is that a dynamic process, meaning that once the threat is eliminated, then the police officer must stop? Or is it that, no, once the threat has produced itself, the police officer now, no matter how that threat gets eliminated, even they're allowed to finish off what they were doing? And I guess a close corollary to that question would be, is how long does it take to fire 16 bullets from the gun that was used?
These are all very, very good questions, because what you're saying is if two or three shots would have eliminated the threat, right? Which means maybe two or three, let's just like make this up. So so Van Dyke takes out his gun, he shoots three shots, McDonald's down on the ground. Now he's still alive, but he doesn't pose a threat. Does the police officer then have an obligation to stop shooting? That's what you're asking, right?
That's right.
And my guess would be yes, but on the other hand, I think the argument is going to be they are trained to shoot, right, until the threat is eliminated. And you don't know when a threat is eliminated because the gun is going off so quickly that by the time you're pulling the trigger, another bullet is out, and that you're making these split-second decisions. And even if someone is on the ground with a knife, they still pose a threat. That's going to be the argument, although that's one that is harder to buy. Do you agree with me that if someone's on the ground having been shot, that they don't pose a threat anymore? Does that...
Right. No, I mean, I guess, yes, I agree with both things you said, that it is hard to determine when the threat is being eliminated when there's so much adrenaline involved. So then I guess the other thing that I think maybe as a juror it would be nice to know is, how long does it actually take to put 16 bullets out?
And
because if it takes like 6 seconds, that's a long time. If it takes 2 seconds, I don't think it matters anymore.
And again, it could be, John, that testimony happened this week or last week, and I wasn't sitting there. I was actually working at my day job. But it could be that someone testified about that, and that would be very important. On the other hand, it's interesting that you say 6 seconds is a long time. It is, but when you're making split-second decisions on the street, I think that's one of the things that I take it you're not a police officer. How do you analyze how quickly something like that happens? You know, and by the time you squeeze the gun, something's going, the bullet's going off, and then you're squeezing the next one. So, I'm with you. I agree. I'd want to know all of those facts, because that probably would weigh in on my decision. But thanks for the call, John. Thank you for listening to WGN. Let's go to Jason. Hi, Jason. Welcome to WGN. You have a question or a comment about the Van Dyke trial?
Hi, can you hear me?
Hi, yes.
Oh, my question is, you talked about Van Dyke's bringing up his past, and I was wondering, in what circumstances can they bring up his past? Is it only if he takes the stand? And my other question is, will the defense bring up McDonald's past, and in what circumstances can they do that?
Excellent
I'll
question.
Take my answer off the air. Thanks
okay.
a lot.
Okay, great. That's a bunch of questions that are really good questions. First of all, you can't bring up a person's background unless they testify, because it has to go to their credibility. So, for instance, if Van Dyke testified and he said, this is what I did and this is what I did, and I didn't mean to shoot somebody, and I'm not a racist, and I rarely use force, okay? He makes that testimony, and then the prosecution prosecution looks back and says, well, sir, isn't it true that you had 20 complaints? And isn't it true that you got sued civilly for using excessive force in 2012? I'm making that up. And so that's where there's a possibility that the judge would let in testimony of his, quote, bad behavior or bad conduct. Other things that he's lied in the past or he's lying about something, that all can be brought in. Can't just bring in anything. You couldn't bring in, you know, he slapped the dog when he was five, because the judge would have to see some connection between the jurors making a decision about what he did on that day in October 2014 and what he did in the past. So it has to be somewhat related, meaning it has to be probative. That's the word that you'll hear, which means, does it make it more likely true or not true that he committed murder? And if it's something about slapping his dog when he was five, the judge would probably say, well, that's not a nice thing to do, but I don't think the jury gets to hear that because it might prejudice the jury into thinking he's a bad guy when he was a five-year-old. But certainly his record, for excessive force, issues that he's had in the past, and he raised his comments, perhaps, that he said, that stuff probably would come in if he testified. And it could be that he has some stuff in his past, and that may be why he doesn't testify. Then your question is, well, and I would imagine a lot of people are saying, well, why is it fair then that we're bringing in the conduct of McDonald, who is the person who was shot? And again, I'm not sure I agree with this, but there's a rule and in a case that in Illinois, it dictates that if someone has bad conduct who is a victim, you get to hear that. The jury gets to hear it. And that's why we're hearing he was violent 2 years ago when he was in the lockup. We heard that the morning of, he lunged with a knife at somebody in a parking lot. We heard that he was kind of pestering some neighbor woman about using her car, and she called 911. And so all of these, and that he had PCP in his system, and you heard all these things, and you're saying to yourself, well, how is that relevant when you have a dead person who committed, who was maybe committing a crime, but did Jason Van Dyke know about this violent history? Wouldn't that be the only reason it would be relevant? Because if Van Dyke knew he was volatile, if Van Dyke knew he was a danger, that would say, then you could say to yourself, well, that's why he pulled out the gun and shot him, because he knew about his propensities to be dangerous. But if Jason Van Dyke didn't know about Laquan McDonald's background, which there's no evidence that he knew about it, what relevance is there? You know? And but again, that's the law, and the law gets applied the way it gets applied, and the jury is just going to have to sift through it and make sense of whether or not his volatile background is something that makes it more likely or not likely that Jason Van Dyke committed murder. Give me a call here if you want to keep talking about it, or your legal calls I'm going to be taking on the other side of the half an hour. 312-981-7200, or text to that number. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show on WGN. It's a Karen Conti Show. We're talking about the Jason Van Dyke trial that may wrap up this week. By the end of this coming week, we may have a verdict. I hope there's no violence in the city of Chicago, but it's going to be a very, very interesting week to watch what happens with this high-profile case. I'm getting a lot of text, 981-7200. Do you think he should testify? Is he going to walk? I'd like to know. What do you think? Is he going to walk, or is he going to be convicted? We've got a text that says it's much too emotional. He should not testify. I believe the prosecutor... I believe the police officer did what he was trained to do. There's no good outcome, yet he was trained to do a job. And this texter believes that he's going to walk. Let's see. Let's go to... Oh, and another texter said, why didn't they just hit him in the leg? And, you know, I hear that a lot. Why didn't you hit him in the arm? Why didn't you hit him in the leg? And listen, if you're trained in using guns, and I've had a little bit of training, I've always said to my trainer, like, someone comes into my house, I'm going to just try to, like, hit him in the knees, right? The answer is no. you don't hit him in the knees because, number one, you're bound to miss because if you're aiming for a leg or you're aiming for an arm, that's a small place to shoot. So you aim for the biggest part of your body, which is your chest. That's what you do. If you're going to use deadly force, you use deadly force. There's no in between. And so that is what the training of police officers tell you to do, is to not hit you in the arm. And then shooting all those times, I think that's a huge fact against Van Dyke. I think that's something that almost everybody who looks at this says, why did he shoot so many times? But again, I think some of the trainers will tell you, You shoot until there's no more risk, and even on the ground, someone on PCP could pose a risk, and the defense is going to be, too, that what do you do after you're done with shooting your round? You reload. Everyone was really upset about the fact that Jason Van Dyke reloaded, but that's what he was trained to do. And again, we hear these facts and we don't like these facts, but if the training of the police officers tells you that that's what they're supposed to do, then you really can't expect somebody to do otherwise. Again, I'm with you. I'm with you. There had to be a better way here so a young man's life wasn't taken. But the training of a police officer says otherwise in a lot of ways. Let's go to Mary. Mary's been holding for a while. Hi, Mary. Welcome to WGN.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, my point is, you spoke of the police officers being trained to eliminate the threat and to continue firing until the threat is over. But I think the point is that there were multiple other police officers at the scene at the time that had been tracking Laquan McDonald for some time, and they were waiting for a taser to arrive to incapacitate him.
Right.
They did not see fit to pull their weapons and fire multiple shots into him. And I think if I had the choice of putting him, Jason Van Dyke, on the stand to testify, I would not, because I don't think he, in the interview I've seen, I don't think he has the communication skills to explain that. And I think that you have to look at the fact that there were other officers there with similar training and similar backgrounds who did not see fit to pull their weapon.
I will agree with you that Jason Van Dyke, in the interview that he gave to Fox, he's not an articulate man. And, you know, he may have been upset at the interview. It may have been difficult for him to talk, but he was not articulate. And I know from the civil lawsuit, the lawyer who represented the family in the civil lawsuit, and he said that Mr. Van Dyke is not a very articulate guy. This is not his strong suit, right? He doesn't testify for a living. He's not articulate. He's not verbal. And so you're right. Putting him on the stand could be a huge, huge disaster. Interestingly, though, there's nothing in the law and there's nothing in the Chicago police rules at the time that said you have to choose the least egregious amount of force. The de-escalation. I believe that the rules have been changed after this incident happened, but there's nothing that says if I could have used a taser and got a better result where he didn't die, I had to do that. And that's upsetting to us. But again, we have to look at the cold, hard law and what the rules were at the time. What do you think, Mary? Do you think he's going to be acquitted, or you think he's going to be convicted?
I'm hoping he's convicted, not of first-degree murder, but I do believe that if I were prosecuting him, I would interview other officers and say, why did you not see fit to pull your weapon and fire shots?
And did you see that his partner testified that he did pull his weapon and would have shot, but for the fact that Van Dyke was standing in the way? Does that change your mind a little bit, that another police officer felt the same way?
No, because I also look, my understanding, and I could be wrong on this, but there were officers who had been tracking him for up to 10 minutes prior to Jason Van Dyke's arrival on the scene.
And what is that?
They had chosen to sit and watch and track him and not confront him directly with deadly force.
And so
again, I understand training and I understand that, but I think I would look at the other officers who had been present and understand and question, why did this one officer feel it necessary to fire his shots right off the bat, and his partner, and not the others?
Interesting. Thank you for the call very much. And you know, that's absolutely right, because that goes to the wording that's in the jury, that's sure to be in the jury instruction. Was your belief reasonable? And what is reasonable might be based upon what all the police officers thought about at at the scene of the crime. If there were 12 officers and none of them pulled their guns except him and maybe Officer Walsh, was it reasonable that he not only pulled his gun but actually shot? But well, we're soon going to see. Let's do this. Let's talk about if you have any legal questions at all. I had some texts and some emails and some phone calls this week that I can go over. But I would like to hear from you. If you have any legal questions about family law, about traffic court, about wills or trusts, give me a call here or text me 981-7200, 312-981-7200, and let me give out my office phone number and email. If you have a question and you don't want to talk on the radio about it, or you need a referral to a practitioner near you in a special area, give me a call. If I have someone, I'd be happy to send you to that person. It's better than going through the phone book. I hate when people pick lawyers that way because you never know who you're going to get. And it's nice to have somebody who at least has some confidence. You have some confidence in the person. Give me a call at the office. It's 312-332-7800, or email me. That's the best way to do it, at wgn@askkarenconti.com. That's KarenConti, wgn@askkarenconti.com. I had a phone call from a woman in Oak Park, Mary Ellen. And she says, I know you advise people to get a will and a trust or a trust, but I don't have many assets except my house. I want to put my three children's names on the title. Is that going to be okay? Well, Mary Ellen, it sounds like a good idea, but it's not always a good idea. I can't give you specific advice about that. But when you do that, it could be deemed to be a gift. So when you put their names on it, you're actually gifting that to them, and you could have to pay gift taxes on the value of what you gifted to your children. So that's a problem. The other problem is if your children, let's say, get into financial trouble for some reason, their name's on the title. So perhaps that title could be impinged, meaning if someone had a judgment against one of your children, they could maybe put a lien on the house, which would risk it for everybody. Also, going through a divorce, if that child has an ownership interest in the house and it was acquired during the marriage. Now, a gift usually stays out of the marital divorce, but for some reason, it could be used when calculating all kinds of child support and maintenance and those types of things. So you want to just make sure that you want to make sure that that's the right decision. Usually it's not. Usually there's a better way to do it. And you live in Oak Park. It's probably a really nice house. It probably has some value. So you might want to consult with a will and trust lawyer, and certainly call me at the office and I'll be happy to refer you. Give us a call here, 981-7200. We've got 15 minutes left on any topic you might want to discuss, 981-7200. Dan Hampton joins the Steve Cochran Show on Monday at 7:10 a.m. with his wrap-up on the Bears-Bucks game. Welcome back. Giving a shout out to my husband, Jerry, who's recovering from open heart surgery. Yeah, he had open heart surgery 2 weeks ago in Northwestern Hospital, and he's recovering. It's a big operation, and Jerry hasn't missed a show in 7 years, except the last couple because of his surgery. And I just want to say happy recovery, and Nurse Ratched is at her best right here. Anyway, if you guys have questions about any legal topic, give me a call, 981-7200, or do you want to talk about Bill Cosby? Do you want to talk about the Jason Van Dyke trial, or do you want to talk about the Brett Kavanaugh hearings? I think someone does. Hi, Jim. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show. How are you?
Hi, Karen. I'm good. I got your hat in the mail that you gave me a couple weeks ago.
Oh, I'm so glad. Wear it in good health.
All right. Brett Kavanaugh got very emotional. Is that a good thing or a bad thing from a legal standpoint?
You know, that's interesting. And obviously, that wasn't a trial. But tell me, what did you think? Did you like
well,
the fact
he
that he
snapped,
got...
He shouldn't have snapped answers at senators, you know, and brought politics into it. He should have stuck to his record and such, I think.
I did not like that he brought in the Clintons. That seemed kind of like out there. I mean, like, where do the Clintons come from? That was from nowhere. But The one thing that I didn't like when he questioned, did you have a blackout? I think it was at Feinstein, the woman at the beginning with the K, Klobuchar, I forgot her name. But yeah. She said, have you ever had a blackout? Have you ever had so much to drink that you blacked out? And he kind of went right back at her and said, well, have you? That was wrong. So here's the question. Obviously, someone probably sat down with him and told him how to act, right? But I wonder if, you know, you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. And this is why it's so hard to testify when you're a defendant, because the jury wants to see outrage that you're being accused of something you didn't do, right? So you could see a little bit of righteous anger might be appropriate. On the other hand, if he's being accused of being violent with women or a woman, and he's, you know, defensive about his drinking, and he likes his beer, and he likes to lift weights, and he's out with his boyfriends, and he's doing this, it's sort of, I don't know. To me, I didn't like his testimony, but what did you think? Did you think it was compelling? And you said that you didn't like the fact that he got kind of went back and at the senators in a way that may have been a little rude, right?
Well, I think he came off as a bit arrogant, and that, you know, all boys do this, and you know, I'm just a regular kid, and I think that he looked just a little too smug, but that's the world we live in. He might have been coached that way because our president looks smug sometimes too. So,
and you know, and you know, to his on his side, you know, if I'm going to defend him, you know, it's obviously a very difficult thing when you have had this great career and you're on the top of the world and you're being interviewed for the top job of your profession, right? And you're being asked these horrible things about what you did back in a time, and it's probably impossible to refute something that didn't happen. I mean, I didn't do it. I wasn't there. I was in Toledo. He pulling out his calendars. I mean, what do you do to prove the negative? It's got to be hard, right?
Yeah. And the thing is the politics end of it, I wish there were just senators could trend towards the middle instead of having to stay on one extreme or the other to please their party.
Because there is no due process in that process. It's a political process, and we all see that, and we all know that. Thank you for the call, Jim. I really appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Jeff. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show.
Hi, Karen.
Hi.
No, I want to crush the left. And I love my president, and I thought Judge Kavanaugh did a great job. My question is, how do you go back 35 years to some high school party? Okay, this is a Richie Rich neighborhood, going to Richie Rich schools, and all kinds of shenanigans are going on. And you go back there, and this woman never, the professor or whatever her name is, she didn't go to the police.
Right.
I mean, if my sisters would have told my dad that they were assaulted at a party, my dad would have been to the police department.
And but just so you know, the vast majority of women who are sexually assaulted and raped in college do not report it to anybody. So if that matters to you, I mean, obviously.
Well, I think this is high school, though.
Yeah, and that's the same in
that's
high school.
Even, you know, if my sisters were assaulted by some guy in high school, believe me, the police would have known about it.
Okay.
But that's just my point. But yeah. I love my president. I love our government. I love, except for Illinois government. It's all messed up. But other than that, we're doing great.
All right,
thank
Jeff.
You.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. And, you know, I think that just illustrates it. I think if you like our president, you're going to like Brett Kavanaugh and you're going to be on his side. If you don't like our president, you're not going to like Brett Kavanaugh. I think I see that. Although I guess I feel from a woman's standpoint, I tend to believe women when they say they've been assaulted. I was a resident advisor in college. I saw a lot of rape. I saw a lot of inappropriate assault. I saw a lot of inappropriate conduct. Boys will be boys doesn't sit right with me, because I think if I had a son and I knew he was 17 years old and he put his hand, let's just say this is true. I'm just going to just say this is true, even if it's not true. If I heard that allegation that my son did that, this is not like graffiti. This is not like drinking and driving. This is not shoplifting. This is something that's disturbing, that you're hurting somebody, that you're hearing a woman scream and you're putting your hand on her mouth. That to me is a significant problem that may lead to other problems in the future, and that I would be very concerned about it. Okay, that's just my two cents. All right, Mike, welcome to the Karen Conti Show. How are you? Mike?
Hello. Oh, hi.
Hi.
Sorry, I didn't hear my name, but I just wanted to ask, like, who do people go to if they win the lottery or, you know, suddenly come into a lot of money? And are there attorneys that sort of guide them in different directions financially?
Yes, there are. There are lawyers that concentrate their practice, or at least part of their practice, in kind of setting up all of the hurdles to make sure that you're safe. I think they set up trusts. You try to set up the trust before you actually accept the prize, so that your name may not be put in the public realm. Also, tax issues and tax ramifications of this, and all kinds of things down the line. And I think a lot of these lawyers will work with financial planners and other people to make sure that the person has good planning and doesn't succumb to, you know, people asking them for money. Did you win a lotto, Mike?
No, it's not like that. It's just I have some potential for, you know, some money to come my way. And I'm wondering, what do you look for as far as, like, do they call them a particular kind of attorney?
It's such an unusual thing, right, that there's really no, you don't Google the name lottery lawyers, although I bet there's probably someone who calls himself the lottery lawyers. Why don't you call me at my office or email me at my office? And I don't know his name as I sit here, but I did refer somebody to a lawyer who purported to do that, and the client was very happy with the representation that I think it was a she got. So if you want to do that, let me know, and I'll give you that referral, okay?
Okay, can you tell me your email address again?
Sure, it's wgn@askkarenconti.com, or you can call me at 312-332-7800. Have a great night. If anyone has any other calls or comments, 981-7200. Otherwise, what I'd like to do is I'd like to talk briefly about Bill Cosby. I hate to end the night on this note, but I got a lot of questions this week about Bill Cosby. He was sentenced to 3 to 10 years. What does that mean, 3 to 10 years? It means that he serves at least 3 years, and the most he can serve is 10. But at the end of 3, he can ask for parole. And if he has good behavior and maybe some other reasons, they will release him. But he's 81 years old. Prison is very difficult on people. It's very stressful. The food is not good. It's very unhealthy. There's not a lot of exercise. There's not a lot of fresh air. So it's very possible that Bill Cosby could go into jail and never come out. He's going to have to undergo sex offender evaluation. He is going to be in a 7x13 cell. He's near a place where they have a medical facility. The jails are just not set up to deal with medical issues, and he is going to have those medical issues. Although the American with Disabilities Act does apply to the jails, so they're going to have to accommodate his blindness, and they're going to have to accommodate his elderly issues and his medical issues. But it's not going to be easy for him. That's a very tough jail. It's not an easy place. Because he's a celebrity, he will either get really good treatment because other inmates might find some advantage of being palling out with him, or they might not like him because of what his crime was. But anyway, Bill Cosby sentenced to 3 to 10 years in prison. Anyway, it's been a pleasure tonight. I want to say thank you to Ben, my producer. And if you want to give me a call at the office, I'm happy to help you with any legal issue you might have. 312-332-7800. Or you can text me or email me at wgn@askkarenconti.com. Coming up, the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.